Om Vijnati Mirandasya Dhanadana Salakaya Chakshu Samilitan Dena Tasmai Sri Radhe Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Sapitam Dena Bhutale Sayam Prakadamayam Nidati Sa Panantikam Vansakapaju Vyascha Kripasindu Vai Vyascha Patitanam Pamane Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Prahlad Maharaj, or rather Yudhisthira Maharaj, had inquired as to the systems by which one can attain pure devotional service, because he has seen Prahlad Maharaj's, or heard about Prahlad Maharaj's devotional service. And although he himself is the greatest of devotees, he was attracted to the reciprocation that Prahlad Maharaj had with the Lord, Lord Nrisingadev. Naturally, because devotional service is so attractive. So he asked about the principles by which one can obtain devotional service, attain it. And Narada Muni began replying by describing the Vanashrama system. So in the first chapter, in this section, he described the system of Vanas, or the occupational duties, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, by which one could work and obtain higher consciousness through one's work. And then in chapter 12, he described the behavior of brahmacharis and vanaprastha students and those who are renounced or becoming renounced. In this chapter, he's describing the behavior of a perfected person, the behavior of someone who is fully renounced, fully attached to Krishna. And in the next chapter, he's going to describe the grihastha, householder ashram, how to perform that. So that one, again, the purpose is so that one develops love of Krishna. From the point of view of people who have no desire to develop the love of Krishna, they naturally won't have a desire to regulate their lives in this way either. But yet, society in general, society should be organized for the people in general so that they will make the most out of their human lives, rather than wasting their lives in petty sense enjoyment, which is flickering and causes so much misery. So in the verses that we heard yesterday, where the perfected person was speaking, he describes why it was that he renounced or gave up any material engagement. And the reason was that he had analyzed the very nature of material pleasures. And he saw that although one is hoping to gain some happiness through his pursuit of material pleasures, what comes is misery. And even if one is successful in gaining some material happiness, it doesn't answer the questions of death. It doesn't answer the question of disease or old age. So this personality, he thought, why should I engage in these materialistic activities? I see they don't bring viparyato smriti. They bring the opposite result than what I want. But yet he thought, it is the nature of the soul itself to be happy. But if one is acting as a soul, one attains that happiness. But if one is endeavoring for selfish, petty, sensual, bodily, material pleasures, one is disallowed from tasting the sweetness of his actual true identity as a soul. So therefore, this great soul, this perfected being who Prahlad Maharaj was speaking to and who was responding, he decried the attachment to body. The body is the self. Because as soon as we identify the body as ourselves, then naturally the desires born of the body become our desires. But as soon as we understand, as Prabhupada has explained thousands and thousands of times, and he hits the point home so many times, that we are not the body. We are souls, we are eternal souls. Dehinos minyatadehi komaram jovaram jara. The soul passes from boyhood to youth to old age, but the person is the same. The identity, that feeling of personality, of existence, continuity of identity is the same. We are souls, we are not the body. I'm not the body, clearly I am not the body that I had when I was 1 year old, nor the body that I had when I was 10 or 30 or 40 or even 50. All these bodies, if you saw pictures of them, you may see some resemblance between the body I'm wearing right now, but those bodies are long gone. So Prabhupada says human life really begins with this. There are so many forms of life. Each one develops, goes through different stages. But what is that force inside the body? What is that living force that impels the body to grow, that fills it with ideas and desires? And as soon as that force, the soul, is gone, the body immediately begins to deteriorate. Whether the body is 4 years old or 10 years old, or whether it's an elephant body, a micro body, or a human body, it immediately begins to deteriorate. As soon as the living force is gone, immediately, instantaneously, the very moment it's gone, the body begins to deteriorate. So where is the science taught in the universities, Prabhupada would ask, that teaches the science of the soul? Where is that science being taught? And this is the ABC of spiritual knowledge taught in the Bhagavad Gita. Sochanan vasochan tvam pragyavanam chabhasyase. You're lamenting, Krishna tells Arjuna, for that which is not worthy of being lamented about, the body. The body must die. The soul must live forever. So this perfected person living on that platform, knowing that he wasn't his body, but knowing that he was a soul, was tasting the sweetness of the soul's existence. And in the last verse we read, if we try for happiness and to rid ourselves of distress, which is everyone's natural tendency, all our plans become baffled because we're under the control of the material energy. One after another, even body after body, our plans, our attempts are baffled. So we'll continue. So one may think, miseries are for poor folks, people who don't have wealth. So in the next three verses, 31 to 33, this perfected person will speak about those who have obtained their desires, the material desires. What is their fate? So he says, materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions: ariatmika, aridhaivika, and aribhautika. That means miseries caused by ourselves, miseries caused by the bodies of others and others, and miseries caused by circumstances beyond our control, such as the heat and the cold and the rain and the tornadoes, like that. So he says, all material activities are mixed with these miseries. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of his success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Prabhupada's purport. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after laboring very, very hard, gets a material profit at the end of his life, he's considered a success, even though he again dies while suffering the threefold miseries, ariatmika, aridaivika, and aribhautika. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life, namely miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to the difficulties imposed by society, community, nation, and other living entities, and miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. If one works very hard suffering the threefold miseries and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of that benefit? If one's worked one's whole life, slaved away, and then he's accumulated enough money in the last few years of his life to retire peacefully. Peacefully? His body is decrepit with old age, painful. Giving him this trouble and that trouble, is he free from that misery? Is he free from the misery of his mind? Is he free from the miseries that others are causing him? Is he free from the miseries of the different conditions imposed by material nature? Is he free from death? So has his life truly been successful? Even if a kami is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. Prabhupada says, I have even seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so that he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful in expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in great bereavement, lamenting, oh no, what about my plans? Everyone must die in this way. And after one's mental condition is taken into account by the laws of material nature, he is given another chance to fulfill his desires in a different body. Material plans for material happiness have no value, but under the spell of the illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There were many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who died very miserably without deriving any practical value from their material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man never desires to work hard under the conditions of threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment. Disappointment, why? More desires, more plans left unfulfilled. What will happen to my beloved ones, my family, my nation? I have built up this empire. What happens if it collapses? This person's trying to attack me from this side. This person's trying to steal from the inside. Who will protect my empire? That's for success. Dying, death, and bereavement. What to speak of if someone isn't so-called successful, but is a failure? Oh, I couldn't gain anything. He has this. I want that. My heart is filled with enmity and filled with burning desires. Everyone unsuccessful unless they develop something that is eternally with them. If their temporary life, tadap adhruvam artadam, unless their temporary lives are used to gain something of eternal value that will remain with the soul throughout all the changes of bodies, and ideally even bring him out of this transmigration. Nothing else. Prabhupada is very unsentimental, very, very hard about this point. Very cutting on this point. Nothing is valuable unless it touches the eternality of the soul. Nothing is valuable. If one dies a billionaire, is he successful? If in his next life he becomes a worm, because he's acted like a worm? Has he really been successful in his life? If he becomes a dog because he's acted like a dog and developed a doggish mentality, has his life been successful? No. So Prabhupada defines a successful life as one, only one, in which one has advanced spiritually. So the perfected person is thinking like this. The Brahmana, the perfected Brahmana, continued, I'm actually seeing how a rich man who is the victim of his senses is very greedy to accumulate wealth and therefore suffers from insomnia due to fear from all sides despite his wealth and opulence. So thinking like this, having pierced through the illusion of material life, this avaduta, who he has decided, I'm not going to participate in it at all. Because even if I'm successful, I'm a failure. The success means I gain wealth, and that means I'm always afraid of someone taking my wealth. So fear is a great anxiety. One can't sleep at night. If one doesn't have something, one's greedy for it. If one gains it, one's fearful. So it doesn't want to touch this kind of thing, that whether you have it or you don't have it, it causes so much anxiety and misery. Prabhupada explains in the second paragraph of this. In the first paragraph, he explains what's the value of the samsara bishanale dhivanishihi ajale, the miseries of material life. They burn like poison day and night. In the second paragraph, he takes the idea of getting wealth and he applies it to the Krishna consciousness movement. Very interesting what he says. As far as our Krishna consciousness movement is concerned, we are getting money naturally, by the grace of God, by selling our literature. This literature is not sold for our sense gratification. To spread the Krishna consciousness movement, we need so many things, and Krishna is therefore supplying us the requisite money to advance this mission. The mission of Krishna is to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and for this purpose, we naturally must have sufficient money. Therefore, according to the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, we should not give up attachment to money that can spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Papan chikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna mamukshubi prityago vairagyam phalukhatyate. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things which are related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, though they are material, this is called incomplete renunciation. So Prabhupada is explaining, to spread Krishna consciousness, one needs money, one needs material things, and that desire for money for Krishna should not be renounced, although the desire for money for selfish purposes should be renounced. So Prabhupada continues, money that can help in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement is not a part of the material world, and we should not give it up thinking that it is material. Srila Rupa Goswami advises, Anashaktasya Vishayan Yitarhan Upayunjataha Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagyamuchate. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relationship to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. Prabhupada continues, money is undoubtedly coming in great quantity, but we should not be attached to this money for sense gratification. Every cent should be spent for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, not for sense gratification. There is danger for a preacher when he receives great quantities of money. For as soon as he spends even a single cent of the collection for his personal sense gratification, he becomes a fallen victim. The preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be extremely careful not to misuse the immense quantity of money needed to spread this movement. Let us not make this money the cause of our distress. It should be used for Krishna, and that will cause our eternal happiness. Money is Lakshmi, or the goddess of fortune, the companion of Narayan. Lakshmiji must always remain with Narayan, and then there need be no fear of degradation. Money is neither good nor bad. It's how it's used. Prabhupada was so practical about this point. Money used for Krishna is wonderful. The purpose of Lakshmi Devi, a fortune, is to be used in Krishna's service. But when Lakshmi Devi is trying to separate Lakshmi or fortune or money or wealth from Krishna and use it for themselves, they are like Ravana, the great demon Ravana, and that will cause their distress and their doom. But money itself in the service of Krishna is wonderful. It is meant for that. Prabhupada was very practical. But he's expressing very clearly the great danger, and it is a great danger. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani. One's desire to love Krishna has to be so great that it burns to ashes the natural desire that conditioned souls have for wealth and followers. And one must handle these things with great care, great care. Not a penny, not a bit for sense enjoyment, everything for Krishna. Next verse, 33. Those who are considered materially powerful and rich are always full of anxieties. So does these verses, the point that he's developing, the perfect person is developing, the point that even if one has great riches, if one is successful, he's not happy, because the happiness again is within our relationship with Krishna. So why aren't these people happy? Because of government laws, thieves and rogues, enemy, family members. If you have a lot of money, everyone is so nice to you. Oh, how are you today? How is your health? I hope everybody... But what are they really thinking? How am I going to squeeze some money from this person? So therefore you become fearful. You can't trust anyone. And you have to hide your wealth everywhere. Rogues, enemies, family members, even family members, they're hoping that you're going to die soon so that they get their inheritance. Animals, birds, persons seeking charity, everyone harassing, give me for this cause, give me for this cause. The inevitable time factor, and even their own selves, thus they are invariably afraid. Prabhupada's purport. The word samsmat means from oneself. Because of attachment for money, the richest person is even afraid of himself. He fears that he may have locked his money in an unsafe manner or might have committed some mistake, so he's always afraid. Aside from the government and its income tax, and aside from thieves, even a rich man's own relatives are always thinking of how to take advantage of him and take away his money. Sometimes these relatives are described as Svajanaka Dasyu, which means rogues and thieves in the guise of relatives. Therefore, there is no need to accumulate wealth or unnecessarily endeavor for more and more money. The real business of life is to ask, who am I? And to understand oneself. One should understand the position of the living entity in this material world and understand how to return home back to Godhead. Next verse, 34. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. Cut it at the root. Give up the original cause of these miseries. The original cause of all these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. Purport. Here is the difference between Vedic civilization and the modern demoniac civilization. Vedic civilization concerned itself with how to achieve self-realization, and for this purpose, one was recommended to have a small income to maintain body and soul together. The society was divided into Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, and the members of this society would limit their endeavors to meeting their minimum demands. Natural living. We see that all the advancement of contemporary civilization and it gets further and further from natural living, has just caused so much havoc on the individual, on the familial family, on the society, on the environment. Everything unnatural. And so much problem has come from that. So Prabhupada would say, no need for all the big factories, no, just a simple agrarian lifestyle. Very, very peaceful. You could eat nicely, healthily, wholesomely, keep healthy, working, eating, no anxiety, staying with family members, depending on Krishna, not in debt, plastic money, so much trouble. So the basic principle, the foundational principle, was completely opposite in the Vedic civilization, that the purpose of life was to spiritually advance, not to accumulate more and more and more so you die a rich man. And when you're dying, all your family members are around the bed. Think, oh, you poor, can I do anything? But they're all thinking, when will he go so I can inherit? Very, very different. Minimum demands. The Brahmanas in particular would have no material desires because the Kshatriyas had to rule the people. It was necessary for them to have money and prestige. But the Vaishyas were satisfied with agricultural produce and milk from the cow. And if by chance there were excess, trade was allowed. The Sudras were also happy, for they would get food and shelter from the three higher classes. In the demoniac civilization of the present day, however, there is no question of Brahmins or Kshatriyas. There are only so-called workers in a flourishing mercantile class who have no goal in life. According to Vedic civilization, the ultimate perfection of life is to take sannyas. But at the present moment, people do not know why sannyas is accepted. Because of misunderstanding, they think one accepts sannyas to escape social responsibilities. But one does not accept sannyas to escape responsibility to society. Generally, one accepts sannyas at the fourth stage of spiritual life. One begins as a brahmachari, then becomes a grihastha, a vanaprastha, and finally a sannyasi, to take advantage of the duration of one's life by engaging oneself fully in self-realization. Sannyas does not mean begging from door to door to accumulate money for sense gratification. However, because in Kali Yuga people are more or less prone to sense gratification, immature sannyas is not recommended. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in his Nectar Instruction, Atyahara prayasas cha prajalpo niyamagraha Janasangas Teloyam Cha Shadvir Bhakti Vinashiti. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities: eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required, over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5, associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6, being greedy for mundane achievements. Sannyasi should have an institution meant to preach Krishna consciousness. He need not accumulate money for himself. We recommend that as soon as money accumulates in our Krishna consciousness movement, 50% of it should be invested in printing books, and 50% for expenditures, especially in establishing centers all over the world. The managers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be extremely cautious in regard to this point. Otherwise, money will be the cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachment, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. When I was alone in Vrindavan, Prabhupada says, I never attempted to construct mats or temples. Rather, I was fully satisfied with the small amount of money I could gather by selling back to Godhead, and thus I would provide for myself and also print the literature. When I went to foreign countries, I lived according to the same principle. But when Europeans and Americans began to give money profusely, I started temples and deity worship. The same principle should still be followed. Whatever money is collected should be spent for Krishna and not a farthing for sense gratification. This is the Bhagavata principle. So how much is a farthing?
A quarter of a penny.
Is it? A quarter of a penny. It's not very much, is it? Less than a halfpenny.
Half a halfpenny.
So not a farthing for sense gratification. Very, very bad if those who preach and collect money accept donations and use it for sense enjoyment. Now, how did this renounced soul learn so deeply this? Where did he obtain his intelligence from? This is further explained in Canto 11, but he's giving his two gurus, he's going to describe his two gurus, his two teachers, where he learned this from, how to live. He was so intelligent that he had two great gurus, and here's who they are. The bee and the python are two excellent spiritual masters who give us exemplary instructions regarding how to be satisfied by collecting only a little and how to stay in one place and not move. From the bumblebee, I have learned to be unattached to accumulating money, for although money is as good as honey, anyone can kill its owner and take it away. Prabhupada's purport. The honey gathered in the comb is taken away by force. Therefore, one who accumulates money should realize that he may be harassed by the government or by thieves or even killed by enemies. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, it is said that instead of protecting the money of the citizens, the government itself will take away the money with the force of law. So this is one of the expertise of all governments, figuring out how and to extract money by various schemes and plans, always saying that this is for your good, I'm doing you the greatest favor, but extracting everyone's money, somehow pickpocketing it, everyone taking all the money from the people by force of law. And when the law says this is what it is, you have to do it. And the other way that the government makes its money is the printing business. So when they're low on money, they just print more. And if you try to do that, you go to jail, but they can do it legally. So the learned Brahmana had therefore decided that he should not accumulate any money. One should own as much as he immediately needs. There is no need to keep a big balance at hand, along with the fear that it may be plundered by the government or by thieves. He continues, I do not endeavor to get anything. But we also have to remember what about Prabhupada's purports about using the so much money required to spread Krishna consciousness. So here is just taking what one needs for oneself, for one's own, to keep body and soul together. So he continues, I do not endeavor to get anything, but I'm satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python, and lie down in this way for many days. Prabhupada's short purport. One should learn detachment from the bumblebees, for they collect drops of honey here and there, pollen, and keep it in their honeycomb. But then someone comes and by force takes all the honey away, leaving the bumblebees with nothing. Therefore, one should learn from the bumblebee not to keep more money than one needs. Similarly, one should learn from the python to stay in one place for many, many days without food, and then eat only if something comes in its own way. The learned Brahmana gave instructions gained from two creatures, namely the bumblebee and the python. So more python stuff. Sometimes I eat a very small quantity and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable and sometimes it is stale. Sometimes prasad is offered with great respect and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day and sometimes at night. Thus I eat what is easily available. To cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark, or deerskin, according to my destiny. And I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass, or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes by the will of others in a palace on a first-class bed with pillows. Prabhupada's purport is revealing. The learned Brahmana's description indicates different types of births. And of course, it's not possible for us to imitate what he's saying for ourselves in this birth. Because very quickly we would die, and then what would happen to our human life? This type of renunciation has to be followed in spirit and applied practically. So the learned Brahman's description indicates different types of births. For one lies down according to one's body. Sometimes one takes birth as an animal and sometimes as a king. When he takes birth as an animal, he must lie down on the ground. And when he takes birth as a king or a very rich man, he is allowed to lie in first-class rooms and huge palaces decorated with beds and other furnitures. Such facilities are not available, however, at the sweet will of the living entity. Rather, they are available by the supreme will, pratyaya, or by the arrangement of maya. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 1861, Ishara sabhabhutanam ridase adinatisthati brahmayan sabhabhutani yantra vridani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity, according to his material desires, receives different types of bodies, which are nothing but machines offered by material nature according to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the will of the Supreme, one must take different bodies with different means for lying down. He continues speaking to Prahlad. Oh my Lord, sometimes I bathe myself very nicely, smear sandalwood pulp all over my body, put on a flower garland and dress in fine garments and ornaments. Then I travel like a king on the back of an elephant or on a chariot or horse. Sometimes, however, I travel naked, like a person haunted by a ghost. Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore it is not... So now he's going to another point. The two verses 42 and 43, we'll read those. And then we'll read the purports after. He's going to a different points on how to remain free from material entanglement. In this way, the behavior of a perfected renounced person, a person in the Paramhamsa, one who is not in the material world by consciousness, but is only physically in the material world, in this way, such a person is described. So the principles of this type of life he's describing. Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping they will agree to become one with the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should be then invested into the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. So here, first he's described the physical elements, from food to one's sleeping place, that one has to learn how to become neutral about. Because if one is thinking, this is really what I want, and this is really what I don't want, I want to live in this kind of a house, I don't want to live in this kind of house, I want to eat only this kind of food, I don't want to eat that kind of food, then one is immediately always in anxiety and has to work to gain those things for himself. And that entangles one in birth and death. So he's describing how it is superior just to be neutral and take what comes. Not be greedy, except a little, whatever you need, and that's all. So it's all going to be taken away eventually anyway. What's the need of accumulating? So now those are on the physical level, but it's the mind's business. This is good. This is bad. I don't want that. That's what the mind does. It accepts and rejects continuously, categorizing everything that it sees, desirable, undesirable, I want, accept, reject. So he's saying, One needs to be neutral in these things as well. So here are Prabhupada's purport. As soon as one comes to the platform of bhakti yoga, or understands fully the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva is the goal of life, Vasudeva Savamiti, Samahatma Sadolava. As soon as one comes to the platform of bhakti yoga, one understands fully the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva is the goal of life, Vasudeva Savamiti, Samahatma Sadolava. This is the instruction of all the Vedic literature. Vedesh chasavar aham eva vidya sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam vrsa. There is no use in praising someone for material qualifications or blaspheming him for material disqualifications. In the material world, good and bad have no meaning, because if one is good, he may be elevated to the higher planetary system, and if one is bad, he may be degraded to the lower planetary systems. People of different mentalities are sometimes elevated and sometimes degraded, but this is not the goal of life. So if someone has good qualities on the material level, or bad qualities, we're attracted to one and repulsed from the other. But these don't have anything to do with the eternal, which this Paramhamsa, this great soul, has realized is the only thing that is good or valuable or auspicious in the material world. So materially good, materially bad, equal. The goal of life is to become free from elevation and degradation and to take to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a saintly person does not discriminate between that which is supposedly good and supposedly bad. Rather, he desires for everyone to be happy in Krishna consciousness, which is the ultimate goal of life. And then how, and as we've heard this process previously, how to invest the senses into the mind and the mind back into the false ego. This is the process of yoga. So this person was the yogi. So he's describing the process of dissolving the false ego, the false sense of self separate from Krishna, the false sense of self as the enjoyer of the material world. He's describing how to dissolve that by the process of yoga. Of course, the devotees use a different process, use the process of just accepting themselves as servant of Krishna. And then the dissolution of the subtle body occurs by Krishna's grace. And so Prabhupada's purport. This verse describes how a yogi can become free from material affection. Because of material attraction, a kami cannot see himself. Jnanis can discriminate between matter and spirit. But the yogis, the best of whom are the bhakti yogis, want to return home back to Godhead. The karmis are completely an illusion. They can't see themselves as souls. They think they are the body and therefore their business is to enjoy. The jnanis are neither an illusion nor in positive knowledge. They know they are not the body, but they don't have true knowledge of who they are. What is the nature of the soul? But the yogis, especially the bhakti yogis, are completely on the spiritual platform. Positive knowledge out of illusion. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, mam cha yoga vicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down under any circumstance, and once transcends the modes of material nature, and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Thus a devotee's position is secure. A devotee is at once elevated to the spiritual platform. Others, such as jnanis and hatha yogis, can only gradually ascend to the spiritual platform by nullifying the material discrimination on the platform of psychology, and nullifying the false ego by which one thinks, I am a body, this body, a product of matter. One must merge the false ego into the total material energy and merge the total material energy into the supreme energetic. This is the process of becoming free from material attraction. Through yoga, So as the creation takes place, one basically reverses the creation and everything ends up in the Supreme Lord. So that's the process of yoga. Now there are just a few more verses. And one purport, basically. A learned, thoughtful person. So this is summarizing, this purport is going to summarize the process of self-realization. A learned, thoughtful person must realize that material existence is illusion. So this is what he's truly realized. This is possible only by self-realization. A self-realized person who has actually seen the truth should retire from all material activities, being situated in self-realization. Prabhupada's purport. By an analytical study of the entire constitution of the body, one can surely come to the conclusion that the soul is different from all the body's material constituents, such as earth, water, fire, and air. Thus, the difference between the body and the soul can be realized by a person who is thoughtful, manasi, muni. And after this realization of the individual spirit soul, one can very easily understand the supreme spirit soul. If one thus realizes that the individual soul is subordinate to the supreme spirit soul, he achieves self-realization. As explained in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there are two souls within the body. The body is called chetra, and there are two chetragyas, or occupants of the body, namely the supersoul, paramatma, and the individual soul. The supersoul and the individual soul are like two birds sitting on the same tree, the material body. One bird, the individual forgetful bird, is eating the fruit of the tree, not caring for the instructions of the other bird, which is only a witness to the activities of the first bird, who is his friend. When the forgetful bird comes to understand the supreme friend, who is always with him and trying to give him guidance in different bodies, he takes shelter at the lotus feet of that supreme bird. As explained in the yoga process, dhyana vashtita tatketena manasa pashyantiyam yogina. When one actually becomes a perfect yogi by meditation, he can see the supreme friend and surrender unto him. This is the beginning of bhakti yoga, or actual life in Krishna consciousness. So this is described in so many places, these processes in detail, from Kapila Muni, and, or in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, of the Bhagavatam, second canto. So now he speaks finally to Prahlad again and says, Prahlad Maharaj, you are certainly a self-realized soul and a devotee of the Supreme Lord. You do not care for public opinion or so-called scriptures. For this reason, I have described to you without hesitation the history of my self-realization. Narada Muni continued, after Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the demons, heard these instructions from the saint, he understood the occupational duties of a perfect person, a Paramhamsa. Thus he duly worshipped the saint, took his permission, and then left for his own home. So we'll read these final short purports. A person who is actually a devotee of Krishna does not care about so-called public opinion and Vedic or philosophical literatures. Prahlad Maharaj, who was such a devotee, always defied the false instructions of his father and the so-called teachers who were appointed to teach him. Instead, he simply followed the instructions of Narada Muni, his guru, and thus he always remained a stalwart devotee. This is the nature of an intelligent devotee. The Srimad Bhagavatam instructs, Yajyai Sankirtana Prayar Yajantihi Sumedasa. One who is actually very intelligent must join the Krishna consciousness movement, realizing his own self as an eternal servant of Krishna, and thus practice constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this was Prabhupada's instruction here. He's saying that Prahlad didn't listen to false teachers, but listened to his real teacher, the real guru, Narada Muni, who really could benefit him. And now Prabhupada is saying what his instruction for everyone is. Participate, join the Krishna consciousness movement, and serve, think of oneself as a servant of Krishna, and practice constant chanting of Krishna's holy names, the Hare Krishna Mantra. And the final purport is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Kiba vipra kiba nyasi sudra kene nai, ye Krishna tattva veta se guru hai. A guru, a spiritual master, can be anyone who is well conversant with the science of Krishna. Therefore, though Prahlad Maharaj was a grihastha ruling over the demons, he was a paramhamsa, the best of human beings, and thus he is our guru. In the list of gurus or authorities, Prahlad Maharaj's name is therefore mentioned. Swayambhu Narada Sambhu Komara Kapilo Manu Prahlado Janako Bhishmo Balivyas Vayasikir Vayam. The conclusion is that a paramhamsa is an exalted devotee, Bhagavat Priya. Such a paramhamsa may be in any stage of life, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, and be equally liberated and exalted. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 13th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Srimad Bhagavatam, Jai, 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 Jai,